don't you know I loved you so? And don't you see me? Don't you care that I was falling down the stairs?
Couple of extra tunes there from the Whiskey Charmers from their release The Valley. That's a track you were listening to called Meet Me There. It's that time, folks. It is a little bit after 5 o'clock, live performance time. And in the studio right now we have, of course, Slight Return. Can you hear me, gentlemen?
Yes, sir.
Hey.
It sounds like we're good to go. Why don't we get started, gentlemen?
Welcome to the D.
right. Welcome to the D. Slight Return live here at Studio J at WHFR, Henry Ford College Radio in Dearborn, Michigan. Sounding great, gentlemen. Off to a good start. All right. If you don't mind, if you can go around the room real quick, introduce yourselves, your name, what you play, etc.
Sure. Ronnie Carmo, drums.
William Pope, Pope Star, bass, orange.
Tony Mitchell, percussion and vocals.
Mark Cass on guitar and vocals.
All right. So you guys have been playing together for quite a while now, huh?
Yeah, I started this band in like 1994, 95. It's been a long time.
Been a little while, huh?
A minute.
All right. So have you just been the constant member, or has some of these other gentlemen been part of it for a long time as well?
Well, originally we started as a three-piece, mm-hmm. and what happened is my best friend was on drums, and we had Mark Dabrowski on bass. After about 10 years together, my friend got cancer, passed away, and so I kind of quit playing for about a year. My wife got on my case and said, hey, you need to play music. You know, your buddy wouldn't want you to stop. And I said, well, I never sang and I never, you know, wrote the songs and stuff except for the music before. Mm-hmm. She's like, you're a smart guy. You'll figure it out. So I slowly started to piece things together again. And a buddy of mine was like, hey, I play bass in the church band. And we started jamming with a drum machine. I was trying to figure out how to play guitar and sing at the same time and write the lyrics. And then I ran across Ronnie from, got referred from a friend of mine. And then we ended up meeting Tony in error as Ronnie put an ad out to find members for like a wedding band. and held the number for like 2 years in his pocket and then goes, hey, this guy called me 2 years ago.
Tony was working on a roof when I called him.
and then me and William Pope have been friends for like 25 years. And finally the timing was right where he came into the band with us permanently.
Wow. That band sounds like fate was definitely working in your favor, especially the wife. I mean, she probably just wanted to get you out of the house.
Yeah, I don't blame her. Shut me up. Go downstairs and play some music. Get out of here, you know?
All right. Let's do another one. right, you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, live from Studio J. Slight Return, giving it all to us. More cowbell. We got that. We got the funk. We got everything. All right. Filthy Rich, huh?
Yeah,
I've been aspiring to that for a long time. The only thing I've ever been able to become is filthy, but not rich.
The rich part is coming.
I hope so. Well, I think I'm rich in other ways, but not money.
Well, those are the more important ways to be rich.
Yeah. Exactly, and music is one of them.
Oh, man, you ain't kidding about that.
All right, why don't we keep it going? I want to hear some more.
Get a little psychedelic on you here.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Live from Studio J with the band Slight Return. All right. Shades of Robin Trower there, I think.
Oh, big Trower. In fact, we played 9 shows with Robin.
Did you?
Yeah, played 9 shows with Robin and even cut a track with Davey Patterson, who sang for Robin for like 20 years.
Wow, that had to be amazing.
Yeah. Forgot the other guys, Rick, Lesh.
Oh, yeah, and we just cut, I have a song, we got a song right now called 69 Days Till Freedom. That's actually on the first round Grammy ballot, which features Pete Thompson on drums, who played for Robin and played for Robert Plant.
Oh, wow.
And Glenn Lesh on bass, who also played for Robin Trower and played for like Journey and Ronnie Montrose and Greg Allman and stuff. So,
wow.
That's, we've been very
that's impressive.
Very fortunate to have some great guests with us.
Definitely, definitely. So that must have been a dream come true playing with Trower. Or, you know, not live at the same time, but, you know.
It was kind of funny because I've been a Robin Trower fan for like at least 30 years or more. Mm-hmm. And especially the 1975 live album where he's just on the front playing the White Strat. It's like live from Sweden.
Yeah.
I mean, I wore the grooves out of that album. I killed it. Yeah, and then in 2008, we landed a gig with Robin, and I was like besides myself. I was at the Royal Oak Music Theater. So stepping on stage with him was just so cool. And then we ended up kind of becoming friends. Their road manager loved our sound, and then we ended up playing with like a Newport Music Hall in Columbus and then at the Orbit Room in Grand Rapids and some other. We ended up doing about 9 shows with them. And just like I said, it was great. Felt especially because I had seen Stevie Ray Vaughan at the Royal Oak Music Theater, and of course the times Robin was there, and it was just definitely a very, very fortunate that we got to do that.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, you said you originally started out, you weren't singing as while you were playing. You just played guitar, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I was just playing guitar and writing, you know, just writing the music part only. And then, like I said, once my friend passed, it's like I had to either figure out how am I going to figure this out again? It was the weirdest thing, too, trying to coordinate. It's so different playing. And obviously, I'm not a singer. I call myself lead talker. I'm not a real vocalist, you know?
Well, I would say you've got like a rock and roll voice. I mean, you're not going to win any awards for your vocal ability.
Yeah, I won't be on American Idol, that's for sure.
No. But it fits for the type of music that you play, you know?
I like to kind of think of myself like Les Claypool. He fits Primus, you know?
That he does. But, you know, I've never been able to figure out how to do it. I do play guitar myself, not as good as you do, but I could never get the hang of like singing and playing at the same time. I just couldn't wrap my brain around it.
It used to just always blow me away watching I mean, I've been a huge Hendrix fan for years. In fact, my license plate's Jay Hendrix on my car. So, but I remember watching him, like me and my buddy getting the VHS tape from Blockbuster Video of him playing at Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we rented like 40 times for like $4. We could have bought it for like 10. Just that first tune, he just comes out playing Johnny Be Good, and just like the way he just, it always just tripped me out how effortless, like it's just like he's singing and playing like it's just nothing, you know, like it's like it's one. And of course during like Machine Gun, my favorite, you know, one of my favorite Hendrix tunes. And it's funny because I actually asked, I recorded with Billy Cox from Hendrix's band. I got invited to go on the Experience Hendrix tour. I couldn't do it, scheduling things. My friends almost beat me up because I couldn't go. But I told him, you just validated my career by asking me. But I remember talking to Billy. I asked him, I go, you know, you guys only played Johnny Be Good one time, which was at Berkeley. He goes, yeah, that's right. He goes, what happened was we were sitting backstage, and I looked at Jimmy and I said, hey, man. He goes, or Jimmy looked at me and said, hey, man, do you remember when we played, when we were in the Army together, we played Johnny Be Good? Do you remember the song? He goes, well, better than you do. He goes, oh, it's on now.
Wow.
And they got up there and just killed it, you know?
Wow. Little history trivia there for you. Would have been amazing to be there.
We got some great stories from Billy. Another one is, now every time I listen to Dolly Dagger, I think of a doorbell. Because he said, me and Jimmy were sitting back. That was the coolest part is when we recorded together, it was just me and him in the studio, a friend of mine, and the engineer. So we got to hear some really great Hendrix stories.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we were on tour. And he goes, I woke up before Jimmy, and I picked up my bass and started playing the doorbell sound. Ba-doo, you know, that doorbell. He goes, Jimmy jumped up and goes, hey, wait a minute, man. I want to add on to that. And he added another part to it. And then eventually turn into Dolly Dagger, you know. So I'm hearing
a doorbell.
Yeah.
Wow.
I started by imitating a doorbell. And then another thing I had to ask him, which is I told him, me and my buddy asked him, like, dude, something's been bothering us for a long time. Jimmy wrote more music in 3 years than guys do in 30 years of playing. I go, but on TV, all you see them is saying he's stoned all the time. I go, how is that possible? He goes, all lies. He says, yeah, did he do drugs? Yeah. He said, but he was not. He said, we'd go in the studio, Electric Lady Studios, at 8 a.m. and come out at 10 a.m. the next day with reels of tapes. We were just having a good time recording. He says, we used to fight with our publicists and say, why are you putting this out there? He goes, because negative publicity sells.
Wow.
Keeps you in the spotlight.
Mm.
So at least verified what I thought, that he wasn't messed up all the time. You know?
He couldn't have been, not to accomplish all that. And to play like that and sing at the same time, there is no way.
Mitch Mitchell said that they'd be coming home from a gig and it'd be on the airplane at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and everyone would be asleep and Jimmy'd have his pen and paper and writing songs and have his guitar out and stuff.
Mm.
So he said, the hardest working man in showbiz, you know?
Yeah.
Jimmy Brown.
That's what I've always tried to tell people. It was death by misadventure, you know.
Right. But by the way, everybody in this room has so much experience playing. I'm like an infant compared to these guys. So, Tony, how many years have you been playing, Tone?
Oh, since I was 3. And
there's pictures of Tony with Sam Cooke.
Sam Cooke.
Ronnie, how many years?
I started in 81, about 37 years.
Pope?
Yeah, I'm at least 40 something years playing.
Oh, you must have been 2 back then when you started, right?
Yep, I was like, God, God, goo, goo,
baby bottle and the bass all the same
right,
time, man.
There it is. Yeah.
All right. We'll definitely have to squeeze a couple more stories in, but let's get some more music.
All right, this is the one we recorded with George Clinton called Funky People.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Live from Studio J in the house, we have Slight Return giving us the funk. Yes, clean your ears out. They were saying funky people, just in case you were wondering. So, recorded with Clinton, huh?
Yeah, George was a real trip, man, because I had heard stories, you know, and I was, actually, the funniest part of the story, we got done with the album, and then I looked at Tony and Ronnie, and I go, you know what would make this album complete? I go, George Clinton on here. And they looked at me and laughed and kind of said, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, like, whatever, dude. But if you don't ask, the answer's always no, right?
That's the worst they can do is say no, right?
So I got a hold of George's management on Facebook. I found him, and I messaged him and said, hey, I'd like to record with George. They politely responded that, sorry, we get a million offers of recording with national acts. We don't record even with them. So we're not, you know, we're not going to be able to record with you. But send us your material anyway. We'd like to check you out. So I sent him the stuff, and then I got an email back and said, hey, we like this. George likes this, but he won't record with anybody unless he meets him in person first. So they said he's flying in from Switzerland to the TV lounge in Detroit, which is right off of Grand River. And they said it's coming in this Thursday. It was Monday. They go, he'll be there Thursday for a Red Bull appearance. It starts at 1 a.m. or 12 midnight and goes till noon the next day. George will be there about 1 o'clock in the morning. You got to be there if you want to meet him. So, okay, I'll be there. So me and my buddy go there. I'm dressed up like in business attire, right? Collared shirt, dress pants, all that stuff, like a business deal. And 1 o'clock in the morning, George walks in with his entourage of 30 people, and he's got like a silver silk suit on, black hat, and they go right to the dressing room. And I'm like, oh, crap. I tell my buddy, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get to talk to this guy. And I thought about it. He had two security guards by the by his dressing room. And I go, you know what, dude, they're going to think I'm his manager because I'm all dressed up nice. I go, hold on. Let me see. I'm going to try something. So I walk up, and I'm like, hey, guys, how's it going? They go, oh, good. Come on in. I walk right into his dressing room. Everyone's like, whoa, who the heck is this guy? And I'm like, hey, George, man, you know, Phil Sennadello sent me. I'm like, he's like, yeah, Phil. I'm like, hey, man, I got this guy and this guy and this album, but it's not going to be complete unless you're on there and blah, blah, blah. And he finally goes to me and goes, all right, I'll play on your record. And I thought he was just trying to get rid of me. You know, I thought he was being polite, like, get the hell out of here. Get this crazy guy out of here. Then a couple days later, I got an email. They're like, hey, you're one of the 1% that George actually likes. He goes, he said he'll record with you. So I'm like, cool. Now the next thing is how to get him into the studio. So I saw they were coming to Freedom Hill in like 2 months. So I set up studio time at United Sound because that's where he recorded all the P-Funk stuff. I said, let me take him where he's comfortable. And so I booked, there was a Saturday, I asked his management, he's staying in town on Sunday also? They go, yeah, he'll be there. I said, okay, I'm going to book United Sound from like 12 to 6 o'clock. And they go, okay, cool. They go, but George may or may not be there because it is George. So I'm like, oh, crap, I'm out of the money anyway. So I go to the studio, I walk in at 12 noon, he's there waiting for me. I couldn't believe it.
He goes, where you at?
Yeah, I couldn't believe he was waiting for me. And this is another one of these weird things you find out later. I was talking to his one of his managers, and he goes, man, we screwed up big time. I was trying to figure out why. You know the song Uptown Funk, Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars?
Mm-hmm.
How huge that song is. So I was trying to figure out why the 2 years ago at the Grammys, they were like honoring the heck out of George. Like, it was like, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's an icon, but it was just unusually more accolades, and Mark Ronson got up there, and Bruno Mars got him and said, thank you, George Clinton. They had him in the front. Come to find out, Mark Ronson originally called George Clinton to be on Uptown Funk, not Bruno Mars, and they didn't know who he was, so they said no. And I told the guy, I go, well, why the hell did you record with me? Nobody knows who I am. I think they were scared they may have made another mistake.
They weren't going to let that happen a second time.
But yeah, I was lucky. He was a very, very cool guy to work with, and we got two videos with him, too, for two of the songs we recorded.
Can we check that out? Is that on YouTube or whatever?
Go to YouTube and punch in Funky People, mm-hmm. Slight Return Funky People, and check out Shake Your Detroit Right.
Oh, excellent. I think I'm going to do that after I get home tonight. Cool. All right, why don't we do another one?
Sure. Hail the Heroes, yeah.
For those that pay the ultimate price for the soldiers freeing this world of strife.
That one caught me off guard. You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, live from Studio J with Slight Return and Hail the Heroes. All right. So you had the chance to work with a lot of great people. God, George Clinton, Billy Cox, Dennis Coffey. Yep. And according to this, you have this album here, Vicious Tides. Andy Vargas and Dennis Chambers.
Yeah, yeah, two of my favorites, man. That was another another weird story. So I, again, I'm the kind of guy who just takes chances because I don't really care if I get if they say no, hey, what are you gonna do? I tried.
Yeah.
So I went to my wife and I went to Vegas because Santana does every few months he'll have like a 2-week stint in Vegas. So we went there and he was playing a Wednesday and a Friday show, and I Andy Vargas has been singing for Carlos for about 23, 24 years. And I just felt like I could write some music with that guy that would really work with his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there, and the guys told me, listen, after the show, there's this entrance. The whole band comes out of this entrance if you want to chat with them a little bit after. So, okay. So after the show, I waited on a Wednesday. It was Wednesday and Friday. So I waited like an hour and a half, 2 hours, two and a half. Everyone's gone. Andy didn't come. I'm like, man, I must have snuck out a different exit. So my wife was getting irritated because I was making her wait with me the whole time. And she's like, and I'm like, well, I guess I'm not meant to record with this guy. So she goes, well, are you going to go back Friday for the next show? I said, nah, I'm not going to do it. Maybe it's not meant to work with this guy. So the next day is Thursday. And she's like, you going to go to the show tomorrow? I go, nah, it's just, I don't think so. It just didn't work out, you know, whatever. Friday comes. She goes, you going to the show tonight? I go, you know, yeah, I think I am. She goes, you know, you got that look in your eye. I think you're going to get it done. So I go to the House of Blues inside Mandalay Bay in mm-hmm. Vegas. So I say, you know what? Instead of going after the show, I'm going to go before the show, and I'm going to stand by the gift shop instead of the other entrance. So I waited. Sure enough, he comes zipping by. I'm like, Andy, what's up, man? You know, of course, they look at you like, who's this crazy person bothering me? And luckily, I had my Welcome to the DCD with me. And I go, dude, listen, man, I know I could write some cool music for you to sing. I hand him the CD, and he looked, when he saw George Clinton was on it, for some reason, I mean, not for some reason, we know why, but George carries so much weight in the music industry because not many people have gotten to record with him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute he saw George Clinton and he saw Billy Cox and everybody, I could tell, I had the look on his face, like, okay, maybe this guy is serious. So he takes the CD, and then that was it. 3 days later, he calls me, and he's like, hey, man, he goes, I like this. I think I want to record with you. And then I go, well, I know you're on the road with Carlos, like 150 dates a year or whatever, so if you want, we could just email each other tracks. He goes, no, I like what you're doing. I want to come to Detroit and record with you.
Hmm.
So he ends up not even – so maybe like 3 weeks before he's supposed to come out to Detroit to record with me, we're chatting. Now, I'm a huge Dennis Chambers fan. And my buddy who passed away, that was his favorite drummer of all time. My buddy was the drummer, and that was his boy. We used to talk about Dennis all the time. Mm. I had the REH, the Star Licks video on VHS tape. And
he was in P-Funk.
The greatest P-Funk drummer of all time, you know? Yeah. So I'm talking to Andy, and he goes to me, and he played for Carlos for 12 years. So Andy goes to me, I was talking to him. I go, man, you know, I really like seeing you guys, but I really miss Dennis Chambers in the band. He goes, well, you want him on your recording? I'm like, what? he goes, yeah, well, we're in the band together for 12 years. He goes, I got a cell phone number. Well, he goes, I'm going to call him, and then you work out something with him yourself and see if he can record with you. So he called him and set up, and so I chatted with Dennis. I was just very lucky he was not on tour at the time. And I talked to him. He goes, well, I got to like the music first before I say yes. So I sent him the tracks. He called me in like 10 minutes. He goes, yeah, I'm in. So it was cool because I brought them to United Sound for a reason, too, because Andy's a huge Marvin Gaye fan, and Marvin Gaye recorded the What's Going On album there. So it's like taking me to Electric Ladyland to record where Hendrix recorded. And then Dennis recorded the P-Funk stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a stroke of luck. The session, we were only going to do three songs. And then I told my bassist at the time, Mike Schneider, I said, do me a favor, just bring your bass. If there's any extra time in the studio, I'm just going to tell the engineer, just roll the tape for whatever time is left and just have a jam session with these guys as a keepsake that I jammed with Dennis Chambers, you know?
Yeah.
So we had an extra hour on the clock. Puts the thumb drive in, and we just start jamming. And I just played everything I knew. I played Marvin Gaye stuff. We played Hendrix. We played Cream. We played all kinds of stuff. The next day, I came to the studio, bought the thumb drive home, and listened. I'm like, man, this sounds pretty good, the jam session part. So I sent it to the guys, to Andy Dess. Like, why don't we release this? This is great. So we ended up, only the first three songs were planned. All the rest are one take off the floor.
Wow.
And it's a full album.
Yeah, so. I see that. Holy crap.
So, what an amazing vocalist, too, man. Andy's voice is killer. It's with Carlos, he's a lot more chesty because obviously Black Magic Woman and all that stuff. But on my album, he really was able to cut loose. He sounds a lot like Lenny Kravitz, Michael Jackson kind of sound, you know?
He's able to, spread his wings, so to speak.
Yeah. In fact, they were like, hey, what do you want to, it was kind of weird for me because here I am in the studio. I've done nothing, and I'm directing these guys. They're asking me what I want them to do. I'm directing them in the studio what to do and telling Dennis what to do on drums. I felt stupid, but he wanted me to. He's like, tell me what you want on the album. So I'm like, all right, this is what I want. I'm like, hey, the beginning of Vicious Tide, something distinctive, kind of like John Bonham, like when the levee breaks, that kind of feel, you know, where it's like something really distinctive. And he did. He opened up with that. There was another point in one song where I had him really open up and go crazy, you know, but it was a great experience. You know, they were happy with all the ideas I had, and it worked out.
Then ended up over in Mark's basement.
Yeah, jamming in my house in the basement.
I bet your wife regretted it then, right?
Oh, no. My wife made a meal for like 40 people.
Oh, man, it was great.
Yeah, Dennis still talks about it. He still talks about it. He goes, how come your wife doesn't open her own restaurant?
Well, I think by now you know to listen to her, though, right?
Oh, yeah. She knows. They know what's up. You know, she knows what's up. There ain't no two ways about that.
Those wives, man.
Yeah. Intuition.
And with all this, you still find time to have time for these three, huh?
Oh, these guys, this is my brothers, man. This is like when even rehearsals are great, man, just getting together and jamming. I mean, these are like some of the top musicians in the world here in this band. I mean, they're just, and we're all friends. That's the best part. There's no egos. There's no attitudes. It's just like, we're just like, hey, man, we just hang out and do our thing. And you know, it's just a good vibe when you come hang around. So that's what even Dennis and Andy like Ronnie was awesome. you know, Ronnie could have been mad, right? I brought another drummer on the album. Instead,
I loved it, man.
Yeah, he was helping Dennis with everything. They were chatting the whole time, became buddies and stuff, and just, you know, Tony, I mean, we just a good vibe all around, you know?
That's great. You don't find that very often at all. You have musicians that play well together, but when you find something like that where you not only get along, but hey, whatever you want to do, that's cool with me, you know? Just
yeah, because most of the time you'll find when there's an exceptional player, they're like a prima donna, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think with us, just the attitude's real relaxed.
Another guitar.
Yeah, yeah, another guitar. That's the Yngwie Malmsteen story. I went to a Musicians Institute in Hollywood, and they used to shoot the REH videos there at the time. And Yngwie was one of them, right? So he goes to do his video. He brings like 30 guitars with him, and he sits in the chair. And every time a guitar, you know, a guitar goes out of tune, right? So you tune up with your tuner.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of tuning, he holds the guitar to his side and looks the other way and goes, another guitar.
Just because he's Yngwie.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Yngwie, another hilarious story. My buddy owns Motor City Guitar. So Marshall Amps called him. They go, hey, Yngwie's playing at the Royal Oak Music Theater. And they go, here's some backstage passes, you know, because he's a good dealer for him. So he goes there, and he's standing on the side of the stage, and Yngwie's warming up, you know, and he's playing, and, you know, he has the look on his face, you know, like, I'm great, whatever. My buddy goes, so Yngwie, because everybody talks about how great, how fast of a player you are. They go, but they never talk about what great vibrato you have. He goes, oh, I know.
He's not conceited. He's convinced.
No, exactly. I'd pat him on the back, but his arm's in the way, you know?
Yeah, you got to stand in line. Oh, that's great. All right. Oh, we definitely want to squeeze a couple more in here.
Okay. Well, this is another one we did with George Clinton called Shake Your Detroit Right.
All right.
Say what I have to say. When I speak, stones move. When I work, how to play. In the blistering sun, I step right out. It's what the fly man says. He's about to heck out. Some bitch in them, but that's all right. Put some junk in the trunk and shake your Detroit right. Boys and girls, class in. Drop the top down and smell the wind. I'm right behind you with my fly trap open.
You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, live from Studio J with Slight Return. All right. Well, let's squeeze one more in. Sure. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for coming down and playing for
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
All right. I don't think I got enough. To me, this is just part one at most. Can you guys come down in the near future?
Oh, yeah,
Ken?
We got a lot of material, so yeah, we'd be glad to come back.
I'd love that, please.
Glad you want us back.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right, once again, ladies and gentlemen, Slight Return.
I.
Ready for one more?
I think that's it.
Listener supported. Non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Featuring local and independent artists.
It's okay?
It's all right. It's all right, it's okay, it's all right.